Today is Wednesday, May 19th, the year 2004. We're in East Lansing, Michigan, on the campus of Michigan State University at the MSU Archives and Historical Collections. I'm Professor Jeff Charnley, along with Dr. Fred Honhart, interviewing George Lauf for the MSU Oral History Project for the sesquicentennial. Michigan State will be 150 years old in the year 2005. As you can see, Professor Lauf, we have a tape recorder for this oral history interview. Do you give us permission to tape?
I do.
Okay. I'd like to start first with some general questions about your personal background. Where were you born and raised?
I was born in Milan, Michigan, and raised there until through high school. Uh-huh. Then I left Milan, never to return.
And then where did you go to college?
I had 1 year at Michigan State, and then I was drafted. And after military service, I returned to complete my my bachelor's and master's here.
Mm-hmm. Was that during World War II?
It was after World War II. I remember I was playing on the softball field here, and when at the activities in Germany, Europe ended, and then I was in Camp Roberts when the activities in Japan ended.
Mm-hmm. Did you serve overseas?
Yes, I was in the Philippines.
Uh-huh. So in occupation and
well,
that sort of thing?
Well, I was assigned to a company of Philippine scouts, so I guess I was 18. I had 200 men after me. Yeah. Quite an experience.
Yeah. Were you an officer?
Yes. Uh-huh. 90-day wonder. I think it took 120 days for me. Yeah.
Quite a few of the emeritus faculty that we've interviewed have been either World War II vets.
Yeah,
I think that's a certainly important part of the story, showing how the university was shaped afterwards by those vets that came back.
Oh, that's true. Certainly true.
What were some of the things from your service that you gained?
Well, a lot of maturity at that stage. I probably was the youngest person in the whole outfit at that time. Mm-hmm. And at that time in the Philippines, there was a rebel unit, much as there is today, trying to distort government. So they were after supplies. So ours was really a guard duty in terms of military storehouses. Mm-hmm.
So there were guerrilla operations that you were having to deal with. How long did you serve?
2 years.
2 years. Uh-huh. And then did you have the GI Bill available at
yes.
that time?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and don't remember using it specifically. I must have, mm-hmm. but I don't remember that level of detail.
And did you come back to Michigan State or?
Yes, I finished my bachelor's and master's here. Mm-hmm. Bachelor's in 49 and master's in 51. Okay. And then I went on to Cornell.
Okay.
For my doctoral work.
What did you study?
Limnology, which is a study of freshwater. And I minored in oceanography and invertebrate zoology.
Mm-hmm. Was there any professor that got you particularly interested in that? Or?
Well, here it was primarily Bob Ball, who at that time was in zoology, because that was before fisheries and wildlife faculty split off, mm-hmm. and also Jerry Prescott in botany. Mm-hmm. I guess it was just botany then, not botany then. So evolution.
Did Cornell have a particularly good
yes, I was,
field in that area?
Dave Chandler was there, and he worked under Paul Welsh, who was at U of M, and I considered Cornell and Wisconsin, visited both sites, and I liked Chandler particularly. Mm-hmm. But if you going to work for a person for a couple of years, you know, that's an important decision.
What was your dissertation?
Multiple sample plankton trap. Hmm. Plankton, at that time there was concern in terms of aggregation of plankton and how to sample. So I was a little better in math at that time than I am now.
How was it that you came, and did you teach at Cornell, or?
No, I, it was interesting because Chandler was hired at University of Michigan, and so I was well along on my degree program, but I couldn't effectively transfer, so I completed it at Cornell, and then had an instructorship in zoology at U of M. Mm-hmm.
How many years were you there?
Through, when did I leave? 1960, so 57 years. I had tenure when I left as associate prof. Mm-hmm.
And how was it that you came to Michigan State?
Well, that's kind of an involved story. I really became interested in research administration at something that evolved, and I was also interested in field station activities. And backtracking a little bit, I had a summer at University of Montana's biological station at Flathead Lake, and then a summer out at the University of Washington's marine lab on Friday Harbor. And I spent, what, 4 or 5 summers up at Douglas Lake, University of Michigan's biological station, where we were working on the Great Lakes at the time. And so I felt that I could do a better job in some of these things than other administrators that I had seen. Mm-hmm. And Gene Odom, who is considered the father of ecology, was at the University of Georgia at the time. And they had recently lost the director of the University of Georgia Marine Institute at Sapelo Island. And I was interested in looking at it, or helping out if I could, on a leave basis. So I took a two years leave from the Department of Zoology, spent the spring down at Oak Ridge National Laboratory, and then visited Sapelo, and I liked the potential that I saw. So I went down with an understanding on a basis of 2 years, and I liked what I was doing and decided I wanted to stay. And so I resigned from U of M, and I spent actually 4 years down there. It was shifted because at the time I was not particularly pleased with what the University of Georgia was doing. It was the operation was supported by R.J. Reynolds of Reynolds Tobacco on a grant, and we had a kind of a grand plan to make it a consortium, Reynolds and I, and he went over to Switzerland and built a home there, and with his fourth wife, and he was not in good health anyhow. So we had these plans that when the tobacco cancer scare hit and I was spending a fair amount of his money and facility development down there, and he felt that he couldn't continue with the commitment. So that I had been approached about the position at Michigan State at that time, and tossed my hat into the ring, and they were final interview process at that time. So, and I was offered the position.
And it was this at Kellogg Biological Station.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So you came from Georgia back to campus.
Yeah.
What? So you had quite a length of time where maybe you weren't associated with Michigan State. From what were the big changes that you saw from when the time you were a student here?
Well,
what were some of when you came back?
Growth, particularly across the river. Mm-hmm. I mean, I forgot when that started, but practically everything across the river has evolved since that time.
Mm-hmm. How did you find the administrative style of dealing with the university here?
Very pleasant, actually. Of course, it was almost like coming back home in some regard, working with the department, and I felt the central administration was very open, and I guess you have to be aware of what happened during that period of time. The College of Natural Sciences was formed, after a spinoff from the Arts and Sciences. Mm-hmm. And Dick Byram was the new dean.
Right.
And also during that period of time, the Dean Cowden of the Ag School, I guess it was just Ag then.
Right.
And was not particularly happy with some of the units they had down there, particularly the sanctuary and the farm. It's an age-old problem, and it's common to the university to have revolving accounts.
Yes.
And they were struggling. And it was in part leadership, I guess, and maybe underfunding from the sort. But there was, when Kellogg established those units back in the late 20s, there was a modest endowment that I guess was probably fine when it was established, but given what, 40 years?
Yeah.
It was insufficient. And from the university point of view, it was probably kind of out of sight, out of mind, and I don't believe they could realistically assign appropriated monies down there. And of course, the major change was that in 52, when Mr. Kellogg died, the Kellogg estate was transferred to the then the College of Natural Science. It was a unit under the old college.
Right. Probably Arts and Sciences.
Remember some of the names. Herman King was
right
there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And it was interesting. I had a kind of an open door because I took entomology from Herman, and so.
He was my first boss.
Really? I enjoyed working with him.
He was great.
So that put that in that unit, and it evolved, of course, when natural science had shifted over there. And it was clear that Cowden wanted to bail out of those two units, but he wanted to keep the forest because the forest probably operated the same way, but they had the a better income stream from managing the forest than the other units did. And so we had then what's termed the Kellogg Lake Biological Station, which is the old Kellogg Estate. We had the farm and the sanctuary. And the forest wanted to remain aligned with forestry, and since it was, Walt Lamine ran a pretty good shop, and that remained that way, although we always considered it as a cooperating unit. And so there's been a good working relationship there all through the years. And
who was president when you took over there? Was it Hannah?
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Yeah. And there was a fairly ambitious land acquisition program that I guess maybe I can get to in a little later. And he had obviously good liaison with the Kellogg Foundation. And I sometimes wonder if that development wasn't a consideration of a MSU West.
Exactly.
Well, see, it was before the community college.
Mm-hmm.
So And but let's see, we had MSU East. They didn't call it that, but
Oakland, right?
You know,
yeah.
But I think there was same pattern, and it was undercut by the community colleges about
development. Right.
That's just my guess.
Well, I think your guess is correct.
Well, you probably have a better source of information than I do.
It would be certainly in keeping with the way John Hanna.
Yeah. Okay, where are we?
just going on about what you were doing. How did you find it when you got there, and what sort of changes did you implement when you took over?
Well, they were fairly fairly substantial, because at the time the unit was known as the Kellogg Station. Actually, it was an egg experiment station in that complex, and to identify all those units of forest and farm and the Gull Lake Biological Station, I developed the concept of having an override in Kellogg Biostation with these functional units. And that was proposed, and a name change took place at that time. And then there was probably, I don't know this, but I, recognizing how things work, I suspect that the new dean had an allocation of positions, and it was a good period of time then. And I came in with wanting to build a year-round program, which meant, you know, having some, at least a modicum of faculty positions, and I guess we ended up with three at the onset. And so then it was a matter of recruiting the best people I could, because it's a little different down there than here on campus, because oftentimes, you know, the major responsibility is the teaching responsibility. Down there, it was research and graduate training. Mm-hmm. So you really had to have top-notch people in order to be able to achieve grant support, because while the university budget would provide salary support and some amount of supplies and services, I mean, it couldn't support any significant research programs. So we were fortunate in that regard in getting three people, and through contacts at U of M and elsewhere, I had a pretty good line on who was doing what in the field. So, because of my own expertise in limnology, we focused on that area, and from the onset, we had looked at the joint appointments as a way of enhancing the campus liaison.
Mm-hmm.
And that proved to be generally good, and their teaching responsibility was primarily during the summer at that stage, although that's evolved more recently, and I think everyone has some teaching responsibilities on campus, you know, during the academic year,
which ties makes for better interaction.
It really does, yeah.
Between campus and the station.
Well, and it gives you a better sense of how the faculty person is perceived, and for the most part, we didn't have any difficulty. I mean, we were fortunate in getting a good faculty base, and Dean Byron was open to additional positions after, I guess, a proving period.
That's good.
Yeah. So it's evolved as a one of the major stations in the U.S., if not the world.
What were some of those early research projects that you were successful at?
The one that I think is most related to the community is Don McNaught, who was interested in zooplankton. He was he got his degree at undergrad at Michigan, and that's where was acquainted with him at Douglas Lake. We worked on the Great Lakes together, and he completed his doctorate and Madison, and then joined the faculty. And he worked on Gull Lake, and it was clear from our initial studies that there was a major problem. There was an oxygen depletion in the bottom waters, such that the cold water fish population, which would have been whitefish and trout, couldn't survive there anymore, because in order to maintain, they require cold water, but they also require oxygen, and the oxygen was depleted. So, but anyhow, we worked on that for a period of time, and then established a linkage with the local community, really an outreach function, since we didn't have an extension unit there at that time. And got into with cooperation with, I can't think of a name, soil scientists, who helped with the analysis, and we did some on fertilization studies, and everyone was grossly over-fertilizing their lawns and irrigating with
just
water,
running right.
So our activities were instrumental in getting community, drumming up a community initiative, and then pursuing a both state and federal funding for an irrigation system.
Sewer system
around the lake, mm-hmm. And the lake continues to be holding its own pretty much in terms of level of productivity.
What was the reason for the low oxygen levels?
You have a very abundant growth of algae up in the light zone. Mm-hmm. When they die, they go on down, they decay. Simple as that.
Okay.
It uses up the oxygen.
Yeah, right.
Nothing for the fish.
Yeah.
Did you work with DNR at that time, or Department of Conservation? Or?
We had some contact. Primarily, they're conducting fish surveys on the lake, hmm. because there were obviously changes in fish population ongoing at that time too. Mm-hmm. And it's a fairly complicated story, because they were catering to the interests of people who bought fishing licenses, and they stocked some smelt there, and people like that, mm-hmm. and but that impacted the lake ecosystem, the fish population dynamics quite involved, and competition for limited food sources and zooplankton. You get into the food chain relationships and something like that. But fisheries management is, I think, as we know from our work on the Great Lakes, more of an art perhaps than a science.
Try something and hope.
Yeah.
What did you find to be the most difficult aspects from as an administrator?
Budget. And I mean, we had good years. Seems we had more poor budget years, and that was always a period of strife. I think anyone, in terms of personnel,
yeah,
having to let good people go, and the other was. Sometimes you get some bad apples, and we're fortunate not having that situation with the faculty, but other employees, that's always stressful.
Yes. What sort of working relationship did you have with the various provosts and presidents during your tenure?
Jack Kinzinger was particularly open, I thought, and I didn't have a lot of time working with Luann Simons, but both those people had a good understanding of the station. Lee Winder as well, perhaps not as understanding of the operation as And for some reason did. She grasped it. And, of course, we had a pretty good track record by the time, she had oversight of it. And I think she was appreciative of some of the accomplishments of the station during that period.
Do you have any contact with any of the presidents at all?
Cliff Wharton, John Hanna, because early on the board met there.
Okay.
And then the board would visit KBS. In fact, John Hanna used to have his budget meeting down there about the time I came.
Get away from East Lansing.
Yeah, right in the phones.
Yeah, exactly.
Did they meet in the Manor House?
I think so, as I remember, yeah. Yeah, that was before we had our upgraded facilities.
Were you involved in that, in the upgrades of the...
Oh, yes, yes. 1980, we had a major grant, a major facilities grant, about $10 million from the Kellogg Foundation. And that provided the support for the new academic building and the dormitory complex, some initial renovation of McCrory Auditorium, the cafeteria and conference center. The new dairy facility, which probably was a mistake. Well, it's difficult because at that time, John Spiker was involved, but dairy felt there were an inadequate number of animals available for their research faculty. And parallel, within a couple of years there, they got a new dairy facility here on campus, and there was a new dairy facility in the UP. So while we were anxious and looking forward to have a meaningful interaction with the campus group, and in fact there was a Hanna chair, Meadows chair, was supposedly to work closely with us, and that never evolved. And we had the first Hanna chair that was designated, and that has only begun to work. Mm. I mean, people come in and they were to be campus based in both instances, but once they got on campus, other
couldn't
interests
get them off, hey?
Yeah.
Who of all the colleagues that you work with at Michigan State would you say were the most memorable from your experience?
Colleagues.
I
guess I have to look at Dick Byram, because although he was administrative oversight of the college, of the station, he really had a sensitivity to it. And I think since it was one of the things he saw the potential that it had for the units and the co-staffing, so he was very supportive of that. And I think I got a sympathetic ear during budget crunches more so. I could never manage my supplies and service budget. Always ran a deficit.
That's a good thing to have if you got a problem like that.
Yeah. Well, we kept them pretty well informed, advised, and associate assistant deans were always sympathetic, generally as well. Go ahead.
What would you say are the biggest changes that have taken place from your in the position from when you came to what it is when you left?
Well, I think the I see an enhancement of faculty expertise. The younger faculty were expected had a higher expectation of their getting research grants and graduate training programs. And I noticed it in part in zoology. I was co-staffed in zoology and fisheries in my life. And I think zoology tended to bloom first, so to speak, and then perhaps fisheries and wildlife. I may be a little biased because I could never get the support from fisheries and wildlife that I was expecting. And you'd think that they had, with that faculty base, faculty orientation, you know, they would be swarming all over the sanctuary and some of the areas down there, but they weren't. And there may be an early history that predates me in terms of that relationship. I'm not sure.
So, in this issue, how often did you come to campus when you were the main campus?
There seemed to be always various meetings in terms of, at the college level, and if you're co-staffed in two departments, there's departmental meetings. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot happening administratively.